Hey folks, Cynthia Dearen here. Last year I had the pleasure of hosting some live masterclasses where I worked with business owners and entrepreneurs looking to take their business overseas. We had a great response to the masterclasses, and so this year I've created some online training so that I can help more people to go global. I'm excited to share with you the step-by-step formula for international success, which is the result of more than 5,000 hours of research around what works when it comes to expanding a company internationally. During the 60-minute web event, I'll be sharing with you the common mistakes to avoid when going global, our proven pathway to international business success, the 9 international business accelerators, and how to gain momentum in 90 days. Now, expanding internationally isn't easy, but if you are serious about succeeding in overseas markets, don't waste your time, energy, and resources figuring it all out on your own. The event is free and it will be well worth your time to attend. You can find details about the webinar series at internationalbusinessaccelerator.com/events. And you can find that link in the show notes to this episode. I hope to see you there. Hi there and welcome back to the Business Beyond Borders podcast. Today I'm talking to UK-based social selling guru Tim Hughes. Tim was a corporate star with a long list of achievements to his name, including leading a large-scale sales transformation at Oracle, which delivered around $100 million in value for the company. But not long after that very significant success, Tim wrote a book, launched his own business, and took it international within 2 years. His company, Digital Leadership Associates, is now a global social media company with a mission to change the way that people everywhere sell. The theme of stepping out of the safety of employment to follow a passion is one that comes up quite frequently on this show, and we're going to explore it today with Tim. We're also going to chat about why Tim believes that social selling has the power to change the world, how writing a book has helped him to launch his company, and his strategies for driving international growth. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So we're going to talk about Digital Leadership Associates today. But before we get there, I wanted to talk a bit about you. And when we were doing the research for this show, I found out that, you know, besides being a social selling guru, you're very keen on music. And you are so keen on music, you even have a Twitter account just for your music. Can you tell me a bit about what kind of music you're into and why you have a Twitter account for it?
I think I probably set it up probably about 4 or 5 years ago. What I wanted to do was actually split off some of the things that I was putting out on my main Twitter account. I have one Twitter account which I do for music. I have another Twitter account which is Digital Lead Tim, which is where I put more technical things that I'm interested in, and then my main Twitter account, Timothy_Hughes, which is about my social selling. To answer the question, I'm interested in all kinds of music. I've got music from, I'm a big rock fan, but I'm also, you know, classical music, opera. I have about 2,000 vinyl LPs, and I've just, my father is luckily still alive, but he's just gone in at home. He's got dementia. And my mother's been basically activating his will. So I've actually got great-grandfather's wooden horned 78 gramophone and 778 album records as well.
Wow, that's amazing. So what are you listening to right now?
I'm kind of going through a new, I'm going through a rock phase.
Okay, what kind of rock?
I've just re-bought on vinyl the Appetite for Destruction, the Guns N' Roses thing that's just been re-released. But it's for me, music is strange because I consume it in so many different ways.
Yeah.
You know, I still sit down and listen to music, which is my preferred way of listening to music is through vinyl. Though I'm here talking to you and all of my digital music is on my iMac here.
Yeah.
And then I'm, because it's morning for me, evening for you, I'm just about to go into London and I'm going to be listening to Spotify on my headphones on the way into London. So
I've just come back from a day in the city and I was doing the same thing. I was playing a Chicane album the entire way.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it, you know, we, and the ability to actually stream music and based on your, you know, I've had a hard day, I'm going to stream something rather than having to put the tape in that you, or the CD that you had to carry. So I think we live in great inspirational times with music. And I'm a great fan of live music as well. So
that is really interesting to know. So again, today we're going to talk about social media. You were not always a social media guy though, where you started as an electrical engineer and then you've ended up running a social media management consultancy. How on earth did that happen?
Well, I did electrical electronic engineering at university, or yes, polytechnic as it was in my day. And from that, it for me, it was a very natural progression to move into the tech sector. So I got a job working for the English computer company ICL, International Computers Limited, if anybody remembers that, it's like 30 years ago, and then spent my whole life in tech. So I kind of been in the Oracle arena for 20, 25 years. I've worked for Oracle twice. I've worked for Oracle Partners. I've run an Oracle partner. So it was kind of easy for me. I ended up doing electronic engineering because people said, well, what do you want to do in life? And I said, I didn't know. And they said, well, you need to do what you find comfortable, what you find easy. So I used to find science easy, and therefore I kind of ended up doing that. For me, it's been a natural progression, kind of moving in tech, then moving into social media probably, well, 9 years ago, while I was working at Oracle, and then realizing when I was at Oracle, especially working on some of the things that I was doing, especially around the sales transformations, that social media is what I wanted to do.
I'm now
very lucky.
Yeah, go ahead.
The fact that I'm able to do what my hobby is as my job.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I'm curious about the transition that you made out of Oracle. So just for people who don't know the context, while you were working at Oracle, you led a really large-scale sales transformation, which delivered more than $100 million in sales uplift. So, I mean, at this point, you were something of a corporate rock star. What was it that made you want to step off that very stable kind of career track and start an entirely new business as an entrepreneur?
Well, I think that everybody probably was wanting to be an entrepreneur. I'd run my own Oracle partner before, though it wasn't a very good time to launch it, because we launched it just only a couple of weeks before the planes flew into the World Trade Center, and everything stopped for like 9 months, you know, from a commerce perspective. Yes. Globally. I kind of felt that I wanted to do this, but the thing for me was that, if I explain the sales transformation, we as an organization were going through a massive change. We were moving from being an on-premise, hardware, software, services, to basically being a cloud company.
Yes.
And luckily, we had a number of very inspirational leaders who actually recognized this and said, we need to actually make a change. And we probably needed to make a change before the competitive pressures. But it was during this change that we actually found out that things had changed in the market and we didn't know it. For example, we were very built around 18-month sales cycles, long sales cycles. And then we took on a sales guy from a competitor and he said, oh, no, we close at the first meeting. And we went, you close at the first meeting. Yeah. And all of a sudden, overnight, we found our sales cycles went from 18 months to 6 months to 3 months. And in fact, we were able to do cloud deals in 3-6 weeks. And that change in the way that people sold, I think, accelerated the realization amongst the management that we needed to do something. So what we did was we completely ripped up the way that people sold and taught them something new, which was had storytelling.
Yes.
And I know some people would turn around and go, yeah, well, everybody does that. Well, we didn't. So storytelling, using whiteboards rather than PowerPoint presentations, and social selling.
Yes.
And actually understanding that you can talk to customers and build relationships through social. I started blogging about it, and then I kind of walked into the book deal, which is Social Selling Techniques to Influence Buyers and Changemakers, which is, I can now say, is my first book, with my second book coming out in October. And that's completely changed my life.
So I'm wondering, I want to talk to you about the book. So maybe I'll ask you about the book now and then I'll come back on it because I want to ask you about how DLA started. But tell me, because we've got onto the book, tell me about writing the book and what that did for you.
Well, it's, you know, I kind of just walked into, I don't know how, it's one of those things. I think sometimes, you know, you make your own luck.
Yeah.
I kind of walked into the book deal. I happened to meet Matt Reynolds, who's my co-author on it. And he, you know, we just kind of said, we need to do a book. He said, well, I've got some contacts at Coke and Page, the publisher. And within 3 months, I was writing a book. And that's completely changed my life because it's a bestseller. It's now used in universities. And that's probably certainly the thing that is generating or one of the ways that we're generating inbound for us as a business. Also, it's in a situation where I have a friendship with my co-founder, Adam Gray. We'd been talking, he was working at Oracle as well, and we'd been talking and saying, you know, what we need is an organization that understands social from a strategic perspective, not just about social selling, but social marketing and social HR and social procurement and social supply chain. And we had an opportunity at Oracle to leave the business and start a company. We did that pretty much 2 years ago, and we've never looked back.
And what was the thing that sort of drove you? I mean, what was the moment of realization that you were going to leave and do something different? I mean, because it sounds as though you were doing really great things at Oracle. So what was the thing that was driving you to do something else?
I decided three years before I left Oracle that I wanted to leave.
Yes.
And I wanted to do something in social media. So there wasn't like a moment where I woke up and said, I'm going to do this and I'm going to just resign. I basically been planning it for 3 years.
Okay.
The blogging and the book and all of those things were my way of saying, this is how I'm going to go out and this is how I'm going to choose the direction that I want to go in. And I think, you know, as I said, you know, the more I practice, the luckier I get. If you're looking for something and you set have a very clear vision of where you want to go, then often you'll find that way.
Yes.
You don't necessarily need to set objectives because things will arrive that you don't know about. And those things can actually change the way that the direction that you're going.
Yes.
I would say that I've been very lucky, but I create the luck.
Did the book predate the business? It sounds as though it did.
It did, yes. I wrote it when I was at Oracle, yeah, at weekends, I would say.
And would you recommend, generally speaking, that people should write their book before they create the business or the other way around? Because a lot of people would say, no, you should definitely start the business first and then when you've worked out what your product is and all the rest of it, then write the book. Have you got a view on that?
Well, I've done both. So I have a new book coming out on the 1st of October. It's actually on Amazon now. It's called Smarketing. And it's about bringing sales and marketing organizations together.
Yes.
And so we've written that, Adam and I, and another guy, Hugo Witter, who's actually a marketing manager at Oracle. And we've written that while we're actually working on the business. And what I would say, it is a distraction. It's really important, I think, for the business as saying, here, these people are experts in their field. And one of the ways of validating that you're an expert is to have a book.
Yes.
It's one of the world's best business cards.
Yeah.
But what I found was that, you know, if you are writing a book while you're trying to run a company, there's only so many hours in the day.
I can definitely echo that. Having written one and having been in the process of writing the second one, especially once your business gets up and running, it doesn't really get easier to find the time, does it?
No.
So tell me, what is social selling about and what is marketing about?
Okay, so social selling is, it's an unfortunate name because it's not really about selling. So if you think about what happened probably 10 years ago, we rang up a company and said, can you send me a brochure? And the brochure arrived 3 days later.
Yes.
Now, if you want to buy anything, we just go to the internet and we research. And regardless of whether we're business to consumer, B2C, business to business, B2B, everybody's going online and doing research, whether yes. it's for a car, whether it's for a $500,000 outsourcing deal, everybody goes on as does research. Probably the bigger the deal, the more likely that they're going to be going on and doing research.
Yes.
So so what we're in a situation is where when I was selling 10, 20 years ago, I would give 80% of the information. Now, from a sales perspective, I'm only giving 20% as a salesperson.
Okay.
Because the buyer has gone on and actually they've gone and worked out what their requirements are. They do this in mainly in salesperson avoidance mode because nobody gets up in the morning and goes, what I need to do today is talk to a salesman. And they'll collect all the information and they'll probably come up with a short list.
Yes.
What social selling is really is a way that salespeople can get back in control of that process. The yeah. buyer is in control of the buying process, and what we can do is actually control the way that buyers they find our content. You can make sure that, you know, in most cases in the environment that I am, you'll probably need to talk to a salesperson. So rather than having a LinkedIn profile that says something like, you know, once I find a customer and I get my teeth into them, they never get away because I always make I close them, whether I sell them some, you know, and people are still writing that on LinkedIn and then they wonder why buyers avoid them. What you need to be doing is that you need to be seen as a solution to the person's problem. Mm. And if you need to, a lot of people will go, yeah, I need to talk to a person, but this person, I think I can trust.
Yes.
So in our business, we get three pieces of inbound every single day.
Wow.
And we actually design we don't do any outbound demand gen. We don't make any cold calls. We don't send out any emails. We don't do any advertising. We don't have to, because we use social as a way to reach out, build relationships and have conversations. And that means, yes, reaching out to people through social, but doing it in a way which is not spammy, but also getting people coming to us and saying, we've done the research, we've looked at social selling, and you are the best people. And what we find with the inbound is it's usually the most qualified. So we don't generally get people going, well, we're thinking about doing this. They've said, we've looked at all of the we've looked at everything on the internet, and you are the people that we actually want to buy from. And yeah. it's usually then actually about not closing, but empowering that person to buy.
And so if we pick up a copy of your social selling book, are some of the secrets to doing this in that book?
Yeah, So Matt and I wrote it deliberately as a handbook.
Yes.
So there's lots of books that you can buy which talk about why you should do something. And you get to the end of the book and go, well, that's really interesting. I kind of knew from the beginning why we need to do it, but what I wanted is a how.
Yes.
So this has been written as a how you can actually social sell.
And where do we find this book? Where do we get it? It's on Amazon.
Amazon worldwide, yeah.
And we will put a link to the book into the show notes for this episode so that people can actually find it as well.
Thank you. And I've had people, you know, write to me and say, you know, this, I didn't know what social selling is, and now I think I do. And it's really just a foundation course.
Yes.
And you know, I've got people that have sent me copies where they've read it four times. You know, they've read it and then they've gone through with a highlighter pen and then they've gone through with post-it notes and still today, you know, when tech came out in 2016, it's still relevant and I'm still getting people contacting me.
Yes.
Even this morning, someone said, read it, really good. You know, if you in foundation in social selling, that's the book.
We do a lot of social, but I think I might need to get a copy.
Please do.
Tell me about the next book.
So we've written a book about smarketing, and smarketing being the merger of sales and marketing. And what we're finding, certainly in the social world, is that the way that sales and marketing traditionally worked doesn't really meet what the buyer wants.
Yes.
So quite often what we find is that marketing is involved in corporate marketing. They may generate some leads and then they hand them off to sales, and they actually fall down a crack and actually never get the sales or whatever. And what we're finding is that there's a complete change in the way that we need to sell and market.
Yes.
People aren't interested in corporate marketing because everybody says we're the best, and it's generally salesy, and therefore people don't read it, which is why there's been a massive drop in people going to websites, because all that does, it just tells you, it's just a brochure.
Yes.
So most to get the best out of your brand is actually to empower your employees on social.
Yes.
To talk about your company, because the thing that you have as a business is the uniqueness of your people. Now, this isn't just about salespeople, but also all of your employees becoming advocates, and that has a number of benefits. One is, obviously, you should get more sales. It also means that you will market and be in front of more people, but it also changes the way that your business is perceived in the marketplace. So for example, you will start attracting people to the company, and you should be able to turn your recruitment process from a traditional push to actually a pull. There should be people queuing up, just like Google and Facebook and Apple. You know, they don't actually have to advertise jobs. People turn up and say, I want to come and work with you. What have you got?
Yes.
And so what we're seeing is that there shouldn't be two different funnels. There should be one funnel, and there should be different types of people working on those inquiries or activities as it goes through the funnel. And what we do within the book is we've actually come up with a change program that people can put in place where they can actually implement a marketing program, and we give them a whole all the things they need to do to think about to actually implement that within their business.
That also sounds like a great read. Is there a link to that book yet?
Yeah, that's on Amazon now, worldwide. Yeah, it doesn't come out until the 1st of October.
That's
We're
okay.
actually still typesetting it, but there's something about them. They have to put it on Amazon early or something for some reason.
Well, we will put links to both of those so that people listening to this episode can locate them. And they sound, as I said, like a great read. Let's go back to talking about Digital Leadership Associates. Hmm. When you talk about how you started it, you make it seem as though it was extremely easy and it was just kind of completely smooth sailing. Is that what the early days of Digital Leadership Associates was like?
I think we had a very clear vision about, or we do have a very clear vision about what it is that we're trying to achieve. But we run the business completely socially. One of the things that I quite often get asked is about how did you decide to go global? Well, I didn't. It happens because I'm on social.
Yes.
Social provides you with a global audience from day one. We would start getting inbound quite early on, you know, from the States or from Australia or Singapore, purely because people would find us. Our company Twitter account now puts on about 1,000 followers a month.
Wow.
We're now up to about 20,000 followers. Plus, so if we take into account our reseller in North America and our associates, then we've got a reach of about a network of about 500,000 people.
So that move into the global space was really something that was quite organic for DLA, and rather than a calculated, okay, well, you know, it's X date today, we've decided that we're going to be an international business.
Yes. Yeah, we know that we've got something that people want globally.
Yes.
And in fact, you know, we've decided that in terms of our marketplace, we go for we're at the larger end rather than the mid market.
Yes.
Where we feel comfortable, where we feel that we can make the biggest difference. And what we're trying to do, our purpose is to change the world and change the world to use social, because social media is probably the biggest technological advancement for humans, certainly within the last 100 years.
Yes.
And it enables us to do what we always do, which is talk to each other.
The move into the international space was organic, but you're now driving growth, you know, around the world through DLA. What are the particular strategies that you're using to actually drive that growth?
So we have a number of global clients that are saying to us, what we want to do is that we recognize that your social selling methodology or your social transformation methodology is world class. It's a world beating methodology. What we want to do is that we want to roll that out across the world.
Yes.
So to do that, we have two choices. We either go and I go and live in the States for 6 months, and Adam goes and lives in Singapore, and we also try and live in Australia at the same time. Or what we do is that we build up a reseller network.
Yes.
And so what we've done is that our go-to-market, apart from in the UK, is all through resellers elsewhere. And we're in the process at the moment of recruiting those resellers. So we have a reseller in North America, and they're, you know, the impact they're making with their clients is just amazing. We're amazed at, you know, one of their clients, you know, they've sold $200,000-$300,000 vehicles, you know, off the back of posts on LinkedIn, and wow, just giving them methodology how to do that. Every single client that we've ever dealt with has generated ROI. We've just been through and looked at that because we're coming up to our 2-year anniversary on the 1st of September. So I'm kind of doing some work around, you know, what have we achieved in the last 2 years? So, you know, we have a robust methodology that can be rolled out across the world. But what our clients are saying to us is that in Canada, we want it delivered by Canadians. In Australia, we want it delivered by Australians. And in America, we want to deliver by Americans. So what we're building up is a network of people that can actually help us roll out those global programs.
On that note, to date, how similar or how different have you found the customers in the different markets you've gone into? I mean, is it all more or less the same, or do you see specific differences country to country?
Oh, there's big differences country to country. I had a Europe, Middle East and Africa job at Oracle for 5 years, where I traveled to all over Europe, Middle East and Africa. So, you know, I know that there's differences in Russia, and there's differences in Saudi Arabia and Israel and Germany, France, you know, Italy. And that's why what we need to be doing is providing a global program, but with the locality or the flexibility of the locality.
And do you see those as mainly cultural differences? Is it culture?
Yeah, yes, most definitely. Yeah. We did some training in Chicago, Adam and I had to take him to one side after about 2 hours. I said, "They don't understand your sense of humor."
Dry or too?
Too dry and ironic. Yes.
Yes.
You know, we were in Chicago and it's pouring with rain, and you know, they come in and go, "Oh, isn't it wet?" And Adam said, "No, it was really sunny when we walked in." And it was it. and I had to say, no, he's talking, you know, it's his sense of humor. So, you know, we get, you know, Australia is actually quite, you know, Australia is quite English.
Yes.
You know, if you're in Melbourne, you could actually be in London.
Yeah.
And you know, from the, I'm talking about the weather as well as in Singapore, you know, in Singapore, we were actually had a meeting with a guy from Microsoft, and he actually told us how to do business in Singapore, which was really interesting.
Yes.
About how Singaporeans listen to you. And one of the things he talked about was that what we do in what I would call Anglo-Saxon America, the UK, is that we generally talk about facts.
Yes.
So, you know, you say, so how many people you got? What's your turnover? How many customers you got? And immediately we're comfortable with that because there are PowerPoints and we've got these graphs that go up and stuff. And he said, we're not interested in that here in Singapore. What we want to know before we get into that is your purpose. What is it? Why do you do what you do rather than what is it that you do?
Yes.
And I think that was a great learning for us about how people do see things differently. And he was saying, you know, you can tell us all these facts, but until you tell us the purpose, we won't listen. Now, that's probably a sweeping generalization, and that may be because of that individual's own personal opinion. But it's interesting to see how often people, you know, we do get used to talking about facts in the US, UK and Australia. And we don't often sit down and say, our purpose, we're going to change the world.
Yeah. And look, it's very interesting to see.
What we're looking for are customers who want to make a difference, who want to see. And, you know, we've had people come into us and say, we want to do social selling. Why do you want to do social selling? Well, because the people upstairs have said we've got to do it. And what do you want to achieve by it? Well, nothing, because we just, the people upstairs have said, okay, we're not the people for you. You know, and we've been very lucky that we've been able to actually say that and not get bogged down in those clients when at the end of it they say, well, what have you achieved? And we said, well, nothing, because you didn't want to achieve anything. And we've been able to walk away from that. All of our clients want to make a difference. You know, they see this social selling as a great way of creating incremental revenue and getting a competitive advantage as well.
What's been most challenging for you about taking DLA forward into the international space?
The thing that keeps me awake at night, and this, I'm not trying to be ironic, is making sure that people don't burn out.
Yes.
I have a whole team of people who are totally dedicated and are so passionate about this. You know, I went to a meeting in Manchester with one of my salespeople, and we're on the train on the way back, and he's sort of like looking at me. I said, I won't mention his name. I said, get some sleep. He said, what do you mean? I said, I want you to put, he said, I've got a call in 2 hours. I said, put your phone on alarm on 15 minutes before, and I want you to sleep for the next 2 hours. And while he was sleeping, I was actually getting food for him. So when he woke up, he had, and for me, the biggest issue that I have is making sure that the team don't burn out, and making sure that they're fed, watered, and they're getting enough sleep. And that for me is the thing that I really want to make sure that we've got the most productive team, and they're getting all the things that they need to be like that.
Yes.
And if that means the CEO has to run up and down the train getting cups of tea, then I'll do it.
It sounds as though, you know, you obviously care very deeply about your staff and about your team. As one of the leaders of the business, that's a really big responsibility. So I'm sure there are some days that are less fantastic than others. What do you do when you have a bad day? So if you find yourself in a difficult situation where you get, I don't know, stuck around making a decision, or, I don't know, there's a difficult situation with a client or a team member, or something goes wrong, what are the tools that you've developed over time to get unstuck, to get yourself out of that stressful situation if you ever get into one of those? What kind of things do you do?
One of the things I learned when I worked at Capgemini was quite often that things go away. That if you suddenly get presented with something, the thing is not to react, but actually leave it there. And usually I leave things until the next day. If I'd answered that question 6 months ago, it would have been going riding my bike. I've actually just completed with my partner the app called Couch to 5K.
Okay.
And now I'd actually go for a run.
All right. So Couch to 5K is an app which helps you run?
Yeah. So Couch to 5K, it's a 9-week program to help you go from your couch to running 5K.
Wow.
And it does it in, you know, the first week you go for like a 3-minute run, and then you have a 5-minute walk, and that, and it builds you up.
Yes.
And I actually find that as a great way of thinking. I find I get a clarity of mind. And I was reading a book recently about how when we were on the Serengeti, And that the only way that could stop you being eaten by a saber-toothed tiger was to do two things. One was to form a group and a team, and the other one was to start running. And actually, the human body thinks better when it's actually using cardiovascular. And I've always found that whether I was cycling or whatever, it enables me to actually think. And that's what I would do. That's what I do.
So running, cycling, and leaving things to the next day.
Yeah.
Those are some good tips. What about favorite books or people who have inspired you on this journey of creating the company? Who might they be? Or if they're books, what are they and why would you nominate those?
So I'm an avid reader. I think that you have to keep reading to stay current.
Yes.
So I read a lot of sales books, which partly because I run my own podcast and then I invite people on and talk about it. So I recently read Deb Calvert's book, which is Stop Selling and Start Leading, which is a good book about why we as individuals, even though we may not be business leaders, we need to actually take responsibility and lead. James Muir's book, which is The Perfect Close, is if anybody out there feels that they have to close business, it's the simplest, nicest way of closing business that you will ever come across. It's just an amazing book and I always recommend it. The book I'm reading at the moment I'm really enjoying is about how to be more pirate.
How to be more?
Pirate.
Pirate.
Pirate, yeah.
As in the people who go around raiding people on the sea?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So there's this guy in the UK who's written it, and there's actually a hashtag called Be More Pirate. He's done some investigation around pirates, and if we take some of the bad stuff and put it to one side, if we think of some of the positive things, pirate ships was in the 1700s. They abolished slavery, so they were a safe haven for slaves. They therefore had a crew that was probably the most diverse that we've seen. So they had people from all different shapes and sizes and backgrounds. They supported same-sex marriage. There was a pirate, in the pirate code, there's an ability for same-sex people, even right down to the rules of what happens if somebody dies and there's a will. So there's a whole bunch of things where actually you're going, hey, that's what we'd like, isn't it? All of those. If we had a really diverse society where we had, treated people like that, and you go, yeah, that's a society we would like, which is why we need to be more pirate.
That's fascinating.
It also talks about why, we need to think about breaking rules.
Yes.
But not just breaking them, but you've got to fix them as well. So you can't go around just breaking them, but you need to, because quite often processes were thought up on a Friday afternoon. And somebody kind of said, well, we'll do it like this, but we can always change it. Then it's been stuck like that.
Yes.
And so, what he talks about is about how we can take processes in the way that we could, the way that we've done things, but then how can we do them better?
Yes.
And that kind of resonates with me with the fact that I'm in the process of changing the way that people sell and market.
Yes.
And there's a lot of vested interest in the world that wants to keep all of those legacy things that don't work in place. And what I'm doing is actually saying the world has changed. There's this thing called the internet. And we need to change in the way we need to not necessarily, it's not a revolution. It's more of an evolution because we've always evolved in the way that we've done things. You know, when email came along, when phones came along, sorry.
I was just going to say the name of that book is How to Be More Pirate.
How to Be More Pirate. Yeah.
Sounds fantastic. I'm definitely going to check that one out. But you were saying we've always evolved and broken rules, and you were about to say that when email came along.
Yeah, so when I first started selling, we wrote letters to people.
Yes.
We actually had a typing pool. This was before This is even before I got my first 386 laptop computer.
Yes.
With AMI Pro and Lotus 123 on it. We moved, I remember when you didn't send emails because everyone didn't have one.
Yes.
And so what we would do, we sent letters to people because letters were opened up. I mean, I have a friend who did some, who was called into a company about whether they should buy email. And the went to the board and the board said, no, we won't have email because it will never catch on.
I remember a few conversations like that back in my younger days.
because everything will be paper. At the time, there was no legal document that you could have or accept, which had to be a letter.
Yeah.
And of course, what we've done is that we've changed that with e-signatures and the world changes and evolves.
Yes. So, Tim, rolling out DLA across the world, that sounds like it's got all of your attention for the time being because it's a big project. What do you see next for you? I mean, have you thought to what the next chapter will be alongside DLA or after DLA? What else would you like to do?
Adam and I want to write a book a year.
Okay.
Which is a bit of a tall order, but I think there's at least another 3 years in DLA as we build up a network.
Yes.
We are getting interest from organizations that, realizing that they need to get into this, and they have three options. They ignore it, they buy it, or they build it.
Yes.
And we are getting interest from people around buying this. We just need to be sure that if we do, then it's right for the people and for the customers.
Yes.
In terms of where I there's another 3 years, and I think we're going to let it go. All of us are enjoying ourselves so much it's not often that you're in a job where you like getting up in the morning,
That's true. So how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to know more about what you do?
Okay, so I'm on Twitter at Timothy_Hughes. I'm on LinkedIn at it's Timothy Hughes. My email address is tim@social-experts.net. That's the usual places where they can get hold of me.
And we will put all of those into the show notes so that if people want to talk to you, they can easily do that. Do you have any final thoughts for entrepreneurs and business owners listening to this podcast and wondering whether this whole international expansion thing is for them?
I think that it's something that it's something that you need to do. And I think as we travel and as we meet people through commerce through the world, I think it enables us to be better people. And I think that we can become more understanding. I've met some amazing people through social and through, I'm sitting here through a mutual friend who I've met through social. So in a way, Cynthia, we've met through social.
Absolutely.
And I think that you meet some amazing people and I would certainly recommend it.
I think that's fantastic advice. Tim, it has been a pleasure having you on
Business Beyond
Borders podcast. And I look forward to checking in with you again down the road to see how it's going.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Cynthia.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. And if you're aspiring to take on the world by storm with your business and you need a little bit of help, check out internationalbusinessaccelerator.com. You can find blogs, ebooks, this podcast, and information about the accelerator itself at that site. So the link again is internationalbusinessaccelerator.com.